family has conducted his many business interests under. And now, with regret, this is where I must bid you adieu. Au revoir, he said before carrying the luggage over to the sparkling aircraft. Two handsome crew members chatted near the metal stairway that led up to the cabin. A tastefully refined blonde flight attendant handed the entrepreneur and the artist hot towels and offered them coffee from a silver tray.
Доброе утро, she said, greeting them in Russian.
It has been a great pleasure to meet you, the driver called up to the jet as he got back into the car. Kindly convey my best wishes to Mr. Riley once you see him, and do have fun in Mauritius.
Mauritius? The companions exclaimed, as surprised as a vampire waking up to a garlic clove.
This is all unbelievable, the artist said as he climbed into the cabin. Mauritius. I've always wanted to go to that island, and I've read a bit about it. It's a high-frequency place. French flavor, tremendous beauty. And from what they say, many of the warmest and happiest people on Earth live there.
I'm blown away, too, the entrepreneur said as she sipped her coffee and peeked into the cockpit. She studied the pilots as they performed their pre-flight preparation. I've also heard Mauritius is splendid, and that the people are super friendly, helpful, and spiritually advanced. After a perfect takeoff, the first-class plane floated high into the clouds. Once at cruising altitude, premium champagne was served, caviar was recommended, and an array of fabulous main courses were suggested. The entrepreneur was feeling fairly content and far less incited by the cruel attempt of her investors to take her company away from her. True, this might not be the ideal time to take a vacation to learn about the 5 a.m. club philosophy and its underlying methodology that had served Mr. Riley's ascent to business titan and global philanthropist like Rocket Fuel. Or perhaps this was the perfect time to get away from her usual reality, to discover how the most successful, influential, and joyful people on the planet start their days. After sipping on some champagne, the entrepreneur watched a movie. She then fell into a deep sleep. The artist had a book called Michelangelo Fiorentino e Raphael da Urbino, Masters of Art in the Vatican. He read it for hours. You can just imagine how happy he felt. The jet made its trajectory over a number of vast continents and above varied terrain. The flight was meticulously conducted, and the landing was as fluid as the overall experience was fine.
Bienvenue à l'île Maurice, announced the captain over the public address system as the aircraft taxied along the freshly paved runway.
Merci beaucoup. Welcome to Mauritius, and sir, si vous êtes Ramgoulam International Airport, he continued, speaking his words with the well-earned confidence of someone who had spent most of his life in the sky.
It's been a privilege having you two VIPs with us. We'll see you again in several days. From what Mr. Riley's personal assistant has informed us of your itinerary, thank you once again for flying with us, and we trust that the journey was elegant, excellent, and above all else, safe.
A polished black SUV glittered on the tarmac, as the flight attendant escorted her special passengers off the plane and into the humming vehicle. Your luggage will follow shortly. Not to worry, it shall be delivered to your guest rooms at Mr. Riley's Seaside Estates. Спасибо, she added in a graceful tone and with an earnest wave.
This is so A-list, observed the entrepreneur, as she happily snapped some selfies, uncharacteristically pouting like a fashionista.
Deaf, replied the artist, as he photobombed her, sticking out his tongue like Albert Einstein did in that famous photo that betrayed his seriousness as a scientist and revealed his undiminished childlike sense of wonder.
As the Range Rover rolled along the highway, tall stalks of sugar cane swayed in the fragrant breezes blown by the Indian Ocean. The quiet chauffeur wore a white cap, the kind you see bellmen at five-star hotels wearing, and a well-pressed dark gray uniform that hinted at an understated yet refined professionalism. He never missed slowing down when the speed limit descended and ensuring his signal light was on whenever a turn was to be made. Though it was evident that the man was older, he moved the vehicle along the roadway with the precision of a young apprentice, dedicated to becoming the absolute best. Through the drive,
his focus remained transfixed on the pavement ahead, in a sort of trance designed to keep his passengers secure, yet deliver them to their destination with a smooth efficiency. They passed through some tiny villages that had a timeless feel. Bougainvillea lined the streets. Wild dogs with king-of-the-road demeanor stood at the meridian line, confronting the SUV in a deadly game of chicken, and children played on small grassy lawns with thoughtless abandon. Roosters could be heard shrieking from time to time, and old men in basic woolen hats with tooth-missing mouths and chestnut-colored skin sat on weather-beaten wooden chairs. They looked like they had too many hours to pass in the day, at once tired from life's hardships and yet wise from days fully lived. Choirs of upbeat birds sang melodically, while colorful butterflies seemed to be fluttering everywhere. In one tiny community, the SUV snaked through. A skinny boy with legs that appeared too long for his body pedaled a banana bike with a seat that was set too high on its creaky metal frame. In another, a group of teenaged girls in tank tops, surf shorts and flip-flops, shuffled along the narrow but attentively maintained road, following a man in army green cargo shorts wearing a t-shirt that had the number one flame-grilled chicken printed on the back of it. Everything seemed to move on island time. People looked cheerful. They beamed with a radiant vitality, not so commonly seen in the overscheduled, machine-dominated, and sometimes soulless lives so many among us are experiencing. The beaches were unspeakably beautiful. The gardens were entirely glorious, and the entire Gongon-looking scene was draped by a series of mountains that looked like they'd been carved by a 16th-century Florentine sculptor. "See that structure up there?" the driver said, breaking his self-imposed silence and pointing to a rock formation at the top of one of the peaks that resembled a human figure. "That's called Peter Bot. It's the second highest mountain in Mauritius. See the summit up there? It resembles a human head, right?" he noted with a finger pointed upward at the structure. "It definitely does," responded the artist. "When we were in elementary school," the chauffeur continued, "we were told the story of a man who fell asleep at the foot of the mountain. Hearing strange sounds, he woke up to see fairies and angels dancing all about him. These creatures instructed the man never to tell anyone what he had just seen, or he would be turned to stone. He agreed, but then, given his excitement over the mystical experience he'd witnessed, broke his commitment and told many of his good fortune. Upset, the fairies and angels turned him to rock, and his head swelled to such a degree it rose to sit at the peak of the majestic mountain you both are looking at now, reminding everyone who sees it to keep their promises and honor their word." The SUV meandered past another community. Music played from a small loudspeaker on a front porch, as two teenaged boys and three teenaged girls with white and pink flowers in their hair danced gleefully. Another dog barked modestly in the background. "Great story," noted the entrepreneur. Her window was open, and her wavy brown hair flitted in the wind. Her usually lined face now appeared completely smooth. She enunciated her words more slowly now. An unprecedented peacefulness emerged from her voice. One of her hands rested on the seat, not so far from where a hand of the artist, which bore finely etched tattoos on its middle and index fingers, lay. Mark Twain wrote, "Mauritius was made first, and then heaven, and heaven copied Mauritius," the driver shared, now warming up after being somewhat steely. He beamed as proudly as a president on Inauguration Day after saying what he'd just said. "Never seen anything like this," the artist said, his goth meets angry man hostility now replaced with a more untroubled, carefree and relaxed demeanor. "And the vibe I feel here is stirring something deeply creative inside of me." The entrepreneur glanced at the artist for a little longer than was politely acceptable. Then she looked away, out at the sea. Though reluctant, she couldn't help but smile gently. The driver could be heard whispering into the SUV's speakerphone,
5 minutes away.
Then he handed each of his passengers a handcrafted tablet that seemed made of gold.
"Please study these," he told them.
Engraved finely in the apparently precious metal were 5 statements. Rule number 1. An addiction to distraction is the end of your creative production. Empire makers and history creators take 1 hour for themselves before dawn, in the serenity that lies beyond the clutches of complexity, to prepare themselves for a world-class day. Rule number 2. Excuses breed no genius. Just because you haven't installed the early rising habit before doesn't mean you can't do it now. Release your rationalizations, and remember that small daily improvements, when done consistently over time, lead to stunning results. Rule number 3. All change is hard at first, messy in the middle, and gorgeous at the end. Everything you now find easy, you first found difficult. With consistent practice, getting up with the sun will become your new normal, and automatic. Rule number 4. To have the results the top 5% of producers have, you must start doing what 95% of people are unwilling to do. As you start to live like this, the majority will call you crazy. Remember that being labeled a freak is the price of greatness. Rule number 5. When you feel like surrendering, continue. Triumph loves the relentless. The vehicle slowed to a crawl as it passed an orderly row of faded white beach houses. A compact pickup truck was parked in the dusty driveway of one house. Dive gear was strewn across the front yard of another. In front of the last house, a gaggle of kids played in the yard, laughing hysterically as they enjoyed their game. The ocean appeared, both greenish and bluish, with foam-topped waves making shoshing sounds, before colliding with the sandy shore. The air now smelled a marine life smell, yet sweet like nectar with unexpected cinnamon hints blended into it. On a wide planked dock, a thin line of a man with a Santa Claus beard and rolled-up khakis fished barefoot for his family's dinner. A motorcycle helmet was perched on his old head. The sun was beginning to set, a glamorous sphere of blinding radiance that cast liquid yellow streaks and reflections on the welcoming water that lay before it. Birds still chirped, butterflies still flew. Quite magical, all of this. "We're here," announced the chauffeur into an intercom perched beside a metal fence that seemed to have been erected more to keep wildlife out than to prevent interlopers from getting in. The gate opened, slowly. The SUV rolled down a winding road teeming with bougainvillea, hibiscus, frangipani, and boucle d'orelle, the national flower of Mauritius, along the sides. The driver opened his window, inviting in a sea breeze, carrying a swirling scent that also included fresh jasmine mixed with rich roses. Gardeners in smart gardening attire waved sincere waves. One shouted, "Bonjour," as a vehicle sailed by. Another said, "Bonjour," as 2 fat doves the size of a trucker's fist hopped along a stone path. The billionaire's house was low-key. The design was of the beachfront chic sort, kind of a Martha's Vineyard cottage meets Swedish farmhouse feel. It was both sensationally beautiful and completely private. A massive veranda at the back of the home extended over the ocean. A muddy mountain bike leaned against a wall. A surfboard rested near the end of the driveway. Massive floor-to-ceiling windows were the only extravagant architectural flourish. More precious flowers were meticulously arranged along a deck, where a trolley supporting hors d'oeuvres, assorted cheeses, and a service of fresh lemon tea with precisely cut slices of ginger waited. Sun-bleached gray steps wound down to a breathtakingly lovely beach, the type seen in the travel magazines the elite crowd liked to read. Amid all this exquisiteness, an isolated figure stood on the milk-colored sand. He made not one movement. Perfect stillness.
The man was Eiffel Tower tall, shirtless and bronzed, and sporting a pair of loose shorts with the camouflage pattern. Canary yellow sandals and uber-stylish sunglasses, the kind you might purchase on Via dei Condotti in Rome, completed the surfer Zen meets Soho swagger appearance. He peered out into the sea, remaining still as a star in the big African sky. "There," said the entrepreneur, pointing. "We finally get to see our host, the illustrious Mr. Riley," she noted energetically, picking up her pace as she hustled down the wooden stairs that led to the seashore. "Look at him. He's just hanging out by the water, soaking up those rays and totally loving life. Told you he's special. So happy I trusted my gut and agreed to this wonderful escapade. He's been true to his word. In a world where too many people say things they never do and make promises they fail to keep, he's been super consistent. He's treated us so well. He doesn't even know us, and yet he's really trying to help us. Zero doubt in my mind he's got our backs. Hurry up, will you?" she urged her slow-moving companion as she waved an encouraging hand. "I feel like giving Mr. Riley a giant hug." The artist laughed as a baby gecko jaywalked across a broad plank. He took off his black shirt in the dazzling sunshine, exposing a Buddha-sized belly and man breasts the size of fleshy mangoes.
"Me too. He does walk his preach. Man, I need to get some sun," the painter murmured as he sped up to stay close to the entrepreneur. He breathed hard.
As the two guests walked toward the man at the water's edge of this nirvana of an ocean compound, they observed there were no other houses in sight. Not even one. Just a few wooden fishing boats with paint peeled off from the passage of years moored in the shallow waters near the shore. And aside from the sun-worshipping empire builder in Italian shades, there was no other human being in evidence. Anywhere.
"Mr. Riley!" shouted the artist, now on the sand, hungrily sucking air into his extraordinarily unfit lungs.
The slender figure remained as fixed as a palace guard, awaiting the arrival of the royal motorcade. "Mr. Riley!" echoed the entrepreneur passionately. No response. The man just kept looking out at the sea, and at container ships the size of football stadiums that sat sprinkled across the horizon. The artist soon stood behind the set of intensely tanned shoulders of the figure and tapped three times on the left one. Instantly, the figure spun around. The two visitors gasped. The entrepreneur put a slender hand over her mouth. The artist jerked backward instinctively before falling to the sand. Both were stunned by what they saw. It was the Spellbinder. Chapter 7. Preparation for a transformation begins in paradise. A child has no trouble believing the unbelievable, nor does the genius or the madman. It's only you and I, with our big brains and our tiny hearts, who doubt and overthink and hesitate. Stephen Pressfield.
Wow,
declared the entrepreneur with a crooked smile that displayed part surprise and part delight.
"We were at your seminar. You were brilliant up on that stage,"
she finally managed to express, pivoting impressively from soft shock to the master of the universe business bearing she was more accustomed to. "I lead a technology company. We're what pundits in our industry call a rocket ship, because of the exponential growth we've been experiencing. Things were going phenomenally well until a little while ago." The entrepreneur's voice trailed off. She looked away from the spellbinder and stared at the artist. For a moment, she played nervously with her bracelets. The lines along her face became more vivid, and her visage gave off a heavy, tired and injured look in that instant, on that spectacular beach.
"What happened?" asked the spellbinder. "To your business?"
"Some of the people who invested in my enterprise felt I had too much equity in it. They wanted more for themselves. Super greedy people. So they manipulated my executive team, convinced key employees to rally against me, and are now trying to throw me out of the firm. That place is my whole life.
The entrepreneur choked up.
A school of luxuriously colored tropical fish swam through the shallow water at the edge of the sand. I was ready to take my life, she carried on, until I showed up at your seminar. Many of your nuggets of knowledge gave me hope. A lot of your words made me feel strong again. Not sure exactly what it was, but you pushed me to believe in myself and my future. I just want to thank you.
She embraced the spellbinder.
You've started me on the journey to optimizing my life.
Thank you so much for your generous words,
the spellbinder replied, appearing dramatically different from the way he looked the last time the entrepreneur and the artist saw him. Not only did he have that healthy glow people get from time in the sun, he now stood steadily and had gained a little weight.
I'm grateful for what you've said, the spellbinder continued. But the truth is that I didn't start you on the quest to improve your life. You are changing your life by starting the process of bringing application to my insights and methods, by implementing my teachings. So many people chat a good game. They tell you all the ambitions they're going to get done and all the aspirations they plan to deliver on. I'm not judging. I'm just reporting. I'm not complaining. I'm just saying most people stay the same their entire lives. Too frightened to leave the way they operated yesterday, married to the complacency of the ordinary, and wedded to the shackles of conformity, while resisting all opportunity for growth, evolution, and personal elevation. So many good souls among us are just so scared they refuse the call on their lives to go out into the blue ocean of possibility, where mastery, the dignity of bravery, and the authenticity of audacity await them. You had the wisdom to act on some of the information I shared at my event. You're one in a tiny minority of people alive today, willing to do what it takes to become a better leader, producer, and human being. Good on you. And I know transformation isn't an easy play, yet the life of the caterpillar must end for the glory of the butterfly to shine. The old you must die before the best you can be born. You're so smart not to wait until you have ideal conditions to step up to a work world and private life of stainless excellence. Great power is unleashed with a simple start. When you begin to close the loop opened by your utmost aspirations by making them real, a secret heroic force within you makes itself known. Nature notices your effortful actions and then goes ahead and replies to your faithful commitment with a series of unanticipated wins. Your willpower heightens, your confidence climbs, and your brilliance soars. A year from now, you'll be so happy you began today.
Thank you, said the entrepreneur.
I heard a man say he needed to lose weight before he could start running. Imagine that. Lose the weight so he could initiate the running habit. That's like a writer who waits for inspiration to begin the book, or the manager who waits for a promotion to lead the field, or a startup that waits for full funding before launching a status quo disrupting product. The flow of life rewards positive action and punishes hesitation. Anyway, I'm thrilled I could contribute to your rise in some small way. Sounds like you're at a difficult yet exciting time on your personal adventure.
Please consider that a bad day for the ego is a great day for the soul, and what your voice of fear claims is a mean season. The light of your wisdom knows is a splendid gift. We thought you were dead, the entrepreneur announced, unfiltered. Thank God you're okay, and I appreciate how humble you are.
I believe the humblest is the greatest. Pure leaders are so secure in their own skin, their main mission is the elevation of others. They have such self-respect, joyfulness, and peacefulness within themselves that they don't need to advertise their success to society in a feeble attempt to feel a little better. I should also say, if I may, that there's a big difference between real power and fake power, the spellbinder explained, dropping even deeper into the guru mode that had made him so famous worldwide. Our culture tells us to pursue titles and trinkets, applause and acclaim, money and mansions. All that's fine, it truly is. So long as you don't get brainwashed into defining your worth as a human being by these things. Enjoy them, just don't get attached to them. Have them, just don't base your identity around them. Appreciate them, just don't need them. These are only forms of fake power our civilization programs us to believe we must pursue to be successful and serene. The fact is that should you lose any one of these things, the substitute power you derived from them evaporates, just vanishes in an instant, revealing itself as the illusion it was.
Tell us more, please.
The entrepreneur was absorbing every word.
Real power never comes from anything external, the spellbinder continued. A lot of people with a lot of money aren't very wealthy. Take that line to the bank, stated the spellbinder as he slipped off his bright yellow flip-flops and placed them neatly on the sugary sand. Genuine power, the stuff legends are made of, doesn't arise from who you are outside and what you possess externally. The world is lost right now. True and enduring power expresses itself when you contact your original gifts and realize your most lavish talents as a human. I should also say real riches come from living by the noble virtues of productivity, self-discipline, courage, honesty, empathy, and integrity, as well as being able to lead your days on your own terms, versus blindly following the sheep that so many in our sick society have been trained to become. Sheeple is what too many people now are. The excellent news is that this kind of power I speak of is available to anyone alive on the planet today. We might have forgotten and disowned this form of potency we have as life has hurt, disappointed, and confused us. But it's still there waiting for us to build a relationship with it and develop it. All of the great teachers of history owned very few things, you know. When Mahatma Gandhi died, he had about 10 possessions, including his sandals, a watch, his eyeglasses, and a simple bowl to eat from. Mother Teresa, so prosperous of heart and rich with the authentic power to influence millions, died in a tiny room containing almost no worldly goods. When she'd travel, she'd carry all her things in a white cloth bag.
Why do so many of the heroes of humanity have so little? Asked the artist, now relaxing on the sand.
Because they've reached a level of individual maturity that allowed them to see the futility of spending their days chasing objects that count for nothing at the end. And they had cultivated their characters to such a degree that they no longer had the common need of most to fill the holes within themselves with distractions, attractions, escapes, and luxuries. The more their appetite for superficial possessions dematerialized, the more hungry they became for substantial pursuits like honoring their creative vision, expressing their inherent genius, and living by a higher moral blueprint. They viscerally understood that being inspirational and masterful and fearless are all inside jobs. And once true power is accessed, external substitutes pale in comparison to the feelings of fulfillment this treasure provides. Oh, and these heavyweights of history,
as they discovered their supreme natures, also came to realize that one of the primary aims of a wonderfully crafted life is contribution, impact, usefulness, helpfulness. What business builders might call unlocking stakeholder value. Like I suggested at my seminar before I fell, to lead is to serve. The philosopher Rumi made the point much more brilliantly than I ever could when he observed, "Give up the drop, become the ocean."
"Thanks for sharing," offered the entrepreneur sincerely, sitting down next to the artist on the sand and placing one of her hands carefully only a short distance away from one of his.
"It's good to see you're doing better," mentioned the artist, his boots now off.
He was sockless. As he basked in the strong rays like a sunbathing cat, he asked,
"What the heck happened to you anyway?"
"Exhaustion," confided the spellbinder. "Too many cities, too many airplanes, too many media appearances, too many presentations. I just ground myself down in pursuit of my mission to help people accelerate their leadership, activate their gifts, and become heroes of their lives. I know better."
The spellbinder then pulled off his sleek sunglasses and extended a hand to his two students.
"It's a great pleasure to meet you both."
"You too, brother," the artist replied. "Your work has helped me make it through some tough times."
As the artist spoke these words, he spotted a catamaran overflowing with festively dressed tourists, whizzing along in the distance. Another school of fish called capitanes could be observed swimming busily in the clear water. The spellbinder spied them, smiled broadly, and then continued.
"You must be wondering why I'm here," he stated.
"True," said the entrepreneur, as she took off her shoes and twisted her feet into the white sand alongside her companion.
"Well, I've been advising Mr. Riley since he was a 33-year-old man. All pro athletes have peak performance coaches, and so do all extraordinary business people. You just can't get to iconic alone. He was starting out when we met, but even then he understood that the more one learns, the more one can achieve. Growth is the real sport that the best play every day. Education truly is inoculation against disruption. And as you become better, you will have better within all arenas of your life. I call this the 2x3x mindset. To double your income and impact, triple your investment in two core areas, your personal mastery and your professional capability."
"Love it,"
the artist said as he scratched his flabby belly. Then he picked at a decrepit toenail.
"Mr. Riley understood early on that to rise to world class, you need world class support. We've become fantastic friends over the years. We've shared tremendous joys together, like 5-hour-long lunches with palm heart salad, fresh grilled prawns, and excellent French wine here on this private beach of his."
The spellbinder stretched his arms into the air. He looked over at the mighty mountains. He remained silent for a few moments.
"And we've experienced deep sorrows together as well. Like the time my buddy got sick with cancer just after his 50th birthday. He appeared to have everything a man could desire, but without his good health, he realized he had nothing. That one changed him. Health is the crown on the well person's head that only the ill person can see, you know? Or as one tradition says, when we are young, we sacrifice our health for wealth. And when we grow old and wise, we realize what's most important and become willing to sacrifice all our wealth for even one day of good health. You never want to be the richest person in the graveyard, you know." "He beat it, though," the spellbinder quickly added, staring at the noisy tourists partying on the catamaran. just like he defends himself against everything that tries to defeat his dreams. Stone's an amazing guy. I love him like a brother. Well, look, it really has been good to meet you both, the spellbinder continued. I heard you were coming. Mr. Riley's tremendously excited to share what he promised he'd share with you about reaching maximum productivity, sustaining exceptional performance, and creating a life you love by coding in a superior morning routine. I'm pleased he's paying it forward and sharing what I, as his mentor, taught him. You'll love all the insights and learning models that will soon be coming your way. The 5 a.m. Club will be revolutionary for you both. I know it sounds strange and unbelievable, but being exposed to the methodology Stone is about to teach you will cause outstanding shifts deep within you. Just being around the information will awaken something special in you.
The spellbinder put on his chic sunglasses.
Anyway, Mr. Riley asked me to tell you to make yourselves at home here over the next few days. You won't see a lot of me because I'll be snorkeling, sailing, and fishing most of the time. Fishing is one of the things I most love to do in life. I come down to Mauritius not only to coach the great and kind soul you'll soon meet. I show up here to regenerate and get away from this overcomplicated world of ours, flush with so many difficulties, damaged economies, saturated industries, and environmental decays. Just to mention a few of the factors that threaten to bring down our creativity, energy, performance, and happiness. I show up here to renew and refuel. Elite production without quiet vacation causes lasting depletion. Rest and recovery isn't a luxury for anyone committed to mastery. It's a necessity. I've taught that principle for many years, yet I forgot it myself and paid the price at the event. I've also learned that inspiration gets fed by isolation, away from the ceaseless digital diversion and mindless over-communication that dominates the hours of the majority these days. And know, too, that your natural genius presents itself when you're most joyful. We get our ideas that change the world when we're rested, relaxed, and filled with delight. This tiny spot in the Indian Ocean helps me reaccess my best. It's also a genuine sanctuary of safety, staggering beauty, and awesome gastronomy, with affectionate people who still wear their hearts on their sleeves. I just adore the Mauritians. Most still have an appreciation for the wonders of life's simplest pleasures, like family meals or swimming with friends, followed by sharing a roast chicken dinner purchased from the Super U, washed down with a nice cold can of Phoenix.
Phoenix? Asked the artist.
It's the beer of Mauritius, replied the spellbinder. And I must say that I always leave the island 100 times stronger, faster, centered, and fired up. I really work hard in my everyday life. I hope this doesn't sound like vanity, but I care so much about uplifting society, and I'm so committed to doing my part to reduce the greed, hatred, and conflict in it. Coming here remakes me, reconnects me to what's important, so I can go back and work for the world. We all work for the world, you know? Anyway, you two have fun, okay? And thanks again for coming to my seminar and for your positive words. They mean more to me than you could ever know. Anyone can be a critic. Takes guts to be an encourager. Being a high-impact leader never requires being a disrespectful person. I wish more leaders understood this principle. Oh, one last thing,
the spellbinder added, as he flicked some sand off his camouflage-patterned surf shorts.
What? Asked the entrepreneur in a respectful tone.
Please be here on the beach tomorrow morning. Your training will begin then.
Sure, agreed the entrepreneur. What time?
5 a.m., came the reply.
Own your morning. Elevate your life.
Chapter 8. The 5 a.m. Method. The Morning Routine of World Builders. It is well to be up before daybreak, for such habits contribute to health, wealth, and wisdom. Aristotle.
Welcome to the 5 a.m. Club, the billionaire bellowed as he bounded down the steps from his seaside home. Bonjour, that's Creole for good morning. You're right on time. I love it. Punctuality is the trait of royalty. At least it is in my playbook. Stone Riley's my name, he declared, as he graciously extended a hand to greet his two guests. The tattered old clothes had been replaced with a black pair of trimly cut running shorts and a pristine white t-shirt with the line, "No idea works until you do the work," emblazoned on it. He was barefoot and cleanly shaven, seemed extremely fit, and sported a wonderful suntan, all of which made him look many years younger than he had appeared at the seminar. On his head he wore a black baseball cap, turned backward. His green eyes were still uncommonly clear, and his smile was astonishingly radiant. Yes, there was something exceedingly special about this man, as the entrepreneur had sensed. A white dove hovered over the tycoon, floating in the air for about 10 seconds as if suspended by magic. Then it flew off. Can you imagine this? It was a miraculous thing to see.
Let me give you two a hug, if you don't mind,
the billionaire enthused, wrapping his long arms around the entrepreneur and the artist at the same time, without waiting for a reply.
God, you have courage. Yes, you do, he mused. You trusted a disheveled old man, a total stranger. I know I looked like a vagrant the other day. Hey, it's not that I don't care about how I look. I just don't care that much about how I look, he said as he laughed at his own lack of self-consciousness. I just like to keep things real, nice and simple, completely authentic. Makes me think of that old insight. Having lots of money doesn't make you different. It just makes you more of who you were before you made the cash.
The billionaire peered out into the ocean and allowed the early rays of a fresh dawn to wash over him. He closed his eyes and inhaled deeply. The contours of his chiseled abdominal muscles were noticeable through his t-shirt. Next, he pulled a flower from the back pocket of his black shorts. Neither the entrepreneur nor the artist had ever seen a flower like this one. And it wasn't at all damaged from being in the billionaire's pocket. Strange.
Flowers are very important to anyone serious about creating magic in their work and private lives, spoke the mogul as he sniffed the petals. Anywho, I wanted to mention that my father was a farmer. I grew up on a farm before we moved to Southern California. We thought simple, spoke simple, ate simple, and lived simple. You can take the boy out of the country, you know, but you can't take the country out of the boy, he added, expressing an enthusiasm that was contagious while his sights were riveted on the magnificent sea. The entrepreneur and the artist thanked the billionaire profusely. They explained that their adventure so far had been phenomenal, and mentioned sincerely that the island and his exclusive beach were more beautiful than anything they had previously seen.
Utopia, isn't it? Said the billionaire as he put on his sunglasses. I am blessed, that's for sure. I'm so glad you cats are here.
So was it your father who got you into the habit of getting up with the sun? Asked the artist as they strolled along the water's edge.
A tiny crab raced by while three butterflies ascended above. Stunningly, the billionaire started twirling around like a whirling dervish. While he spun, he began to shout these words.
I would have it inscribed on the curtains of your chamber. If you do not rise early, you can make progress in nothing.
What are you doing? Questioned the entrepreneur.
It's an excellent quote from William Pitt, the Earl of Chatham. For some reason, I just felt the need to share it right now. Anywho, let me answer the question about my father,
the billionaire said awkwardly.
Yes and no. I watched him rise early every morning of my childhood. As with any good routine, he did it so many times that it became impossible for him not to do it. But like most kids, I resisted what my dad wanted me to do. I always had some form of rebel within me. I'm a bit of a pirate in a way. Rather than fight a small war with me every day for whatever reason, he just let me do what I wanted to do. So I'd sleep. Late.
"Cool, father," spoke the entrepreneur, who was dressed in yoga gear this morning and carried her device with her to make careful notes.
"He was," affirmed the billionaire, warmly putting his arms around his students as they continued to walk slowly along the pristine beach. Mr. Riley continued. "It was actually the spellbinder who taught me the 5 a.m. method. I was a young man when I first met him. I just launched my first company. I needed someone to guide me, challenge me, and develop me as an entrepreneur, a peak achiever, and as a leader. Everyone said he was the best executive coach in the world by far. He had a 3-year waiting list. So I called him every day until he agreed to become my mentor. He was pretty young back then, too, but his teachings had a depth of wisdom, a purity of power, and an ingenious impact that was remarkably advanced for his age."
"And the early rising discipline helped," the artist broke in.
The billionaire smiled at the artist and stopped walking.
"It was the one practice that changed and elevated every other practice. Researchers now call this kind of a core behavior that multiplies all your other regular patterns of performing a keystone habit. Wiring it in as a profound neural pathway took some effort, a little suffering along the way, and the strongest commitment I had in me. I'll be honest with you, there were days during the process of automating this routine that I was cranky. Days when my head pounded like a jackhammer, and mornings when I just wanted to keep sleeping. But once I locked and loaded getting up at 5 a.m. regularly, my days grew consistently and vastly better than anything I've ever experienced."
"How?" both listeners wondered aloud in unison. The entrepreneur touched one of her fingers on the artist's arm affectionately, as if to suggest they were together in this experience, that they were now a team, and that she had his best interests at heart. The artist locked his eyes onto hers. A gentle grin emerged. The billionaire went on.
"In this time of exponential change, overwhelming distractions and overflowing schedules, getting up at 5 a.m. and running the morning regime the spellbinder taught me was my antidote to average. No more rushing in my morning. Imagine what that alone does for the quality of your day. Starting your day luxuriating in the quietude only the early morning provides. Beginning your day feeling strong and centered and free. I found that my mind became dramatically more focused as the days progressed. Every great performer, whether we're talking about a championship athlete, a top-tier executive, a celebrated architect, or a revered cellist, has developed the ability to concentrate on optimizing their particular skill for long, uninterrupted periods of time. This capability is one of the special factors that allows them to generate such high-quality results. In a world where too many people dilute their cognitive bandwidth and fragment their attention, accepting poor performances and ordinary achievements while leading lives of disappointing mediocrity."
"I definitely agree," indicated the artist. "It's rare to see someone focus on their art for many, many hours in a row these days. The spellbinder was right when at his session he called people addicted to their devices cyber zombies. I see them every day. It's like they're not real human beings anymore. More like robots, glued to their screens, not present, and half alive to life."
"I hear you," said the billionaire. "Protection from distraction is precisely how you need to work if you're serious about dominating your field and winning at your craft. Neuroscientists call this peak mental state we're speaking of, where our perception becomes heightened and our availability to original ideas rises, and we access an all-new level of processing power, flow. And rising at 5 a.m. promotes the flow state gorgeously. Oh, and by getting up before daybreak, while almost everyone around you is asleep, my creativity also soared. My energy definitely doubled.
My productivity surely tripled. My...
You're serious? The entrepreneur interrupted, unable to contain her fascination with the idea that a simple shift toward a bespoke morning routine could reorder a human life so completely.
Absolutely. Honesty has been one of my core convictions for all my years in business. Nothing beats going to sleep early each night with an unspoiled conscience and a mess-free heart. That's part of my farm boy nature, I guess, observed the billionaire.
Abruptly, the entrepreneur's phone signaled the arrival of an urgent incoming message. So sorry, I told my team not to call me here. I was clear with them. I can't imagine why they're bothering me now, she said as she looked down at the screen. In all caps, the following stark words appeared. Leave the company, or else you die. The entrepreneur fumbled with her phone, then she accidentally dropped it into the sand. Soon she was gasping for air.
What happened?
The artist asked quickly, sensing trouble. Seeing the blood wash out of his friend's face and her hands trembling, he repeated with greater intensity and even higher empathy,
What happened?
The billionaire also appeared concerned.
Are you okay? Do you need some water or something?
I just received a death threat from, my investors. They want my firm. They are, trying to kick me out because they think I have too big a share. They just told me that if I don't walk away, they'll, kill me.
Instantly, the billionaire ripped off the sunglasses he was sporting and held them in the air, making a circling movement. Seconds later, from behind a flourish of palm trees, two large men with earpieces and rifles sprinted down to the beachfront as fast as a cyclist on steroids.
Boss, you all right?
The tallest of the two big men asked tensely.
Yes,
came the confident and calm reply to his security detail.
But I need you two to check this out immediately. If it's cool for me to do this for you,
he said as he looked at the entrepreneur,
I can help you make this go away.
The billionaire then muttered something to himself, and a flight of doves soared by.
Sure, yes, I'd appreciate some help, the businesswoman replied,
her voice still shaking and pearls of perspiration appearing on her forehead, in the area where all those creases were.
Leave this with us, declared the billionaire.
He then spoke to his protection people, politely, yet with an undeniable air of authority.
Seems my guest here is being seriously harassed by some thugs hoping to take over her enterprise. Please figure out exactly what they're up to, and then present me with your solution.
Don't worry, he told the entrepreneur.
My guys are the best in the business. This won't be a problem.
Mr. Riley articulated this last sentence in a fashion that emphasized each word for powerful effect.
Thank you very much,
the entrepreneur responded, looking enormously relieved. The artist held her hand tenderly.
Okay if I continue?
The billionaire requested as the sun rose higher into the glamorous tropical sky. His guests nodded. An attendant, impeccably attired, emerged from a hut that sat higher up on the beach. It was painted green with white trim. Soon, the aide was serving the richest, most delicious coffee the entrepreneur and the artist had enjoyed in their lives.
Fantastic cognitive enhancer when consumed in moderation each morning, expounded the billionaire as he sipped away. And it's packed with antioxidants, so coffee also slows aging. Anywho, where were we? I was telling you about the awesome benefit that flowed to me after I joined the 5 AM Club and ran the morning methodology the Spellbinder revealed to me. It's called the 20-20-20 formula. And trust me, once you learn this concept alone and then apply it with persistency, your productivity, prosperity, performance, and impact will increase exponentially. I can't think of another ritual that has contributed to my success and well-being as much. I'm exceedingly low-key about what I've been able to accomplish in my business career. I've always viewed bragging as a major defect of character. The more powerful a person truly is, the less they need to promote it,
and the stronger a leader is, the less they need to announce it.
The Spellbinder spoke a bit about what you've been able to achieve, offered the entrepreneur, now looking even more relaxed.
And the wild way you dressed at the conference definitely confirmed it, interjected the artist, flashing a sensational smile that showcased a few broken teeth.
Rising at 5 a.m. every morning was the main personal practice that made most of that happen. Allowed me to become a visionary thinker. Gave me a reflective space to develop a formidable inner life. The discipline helped me to become ultra-fit, with all the beautiful income advancements as well as lifestyle enhancements that come with superior health. Early rising also made me a pretty amazing leader, and it helped me grow myself into a much better person. Even when the prostate cancer tried to devastate me, it was my morning routine that insulated me. It really was. I'll go into the 20-20-20 formula in an upcoming lesson, so you'll know exactly what to do to get amazing results from the first moment you wake up. You cats won't believe the power and value of the information that's coming. I'm so excited for you two. Welcome to paradise, and welcome to the first day of a substantially better life.
The entrepreneur slept more soundly that night in Mauritius than she had in years. Despite the threat she had received, the combination of the billionaire's brief instruction, the magnificence of the natural setting, the purity of the clean ocean air, and her growing fondness for the artist caused her to let go of many of her concerns and rediscover a state of calm she'd long since forgotten. Then at precisely 3:33 a.m., she heard a thunderous bang on her door. She knew it was this time because she glanced at the alarm clock on the wooden night table in the stylish guest house her host had arranged for her to stay in. The entrepreneur assumed it was the artist, perhaps dealing with jet lag or sleepless after the excellent yet large dinner they had enjoyed together. Without asking who it was, she opened the door. No one was there. "Hello," she announced to a star-filled sky. Waves softly collided with the seashore near her cottage, and the scent of roses, incense, and sandalwood could be detected in the breeze.
"Anyone here?"
Silence. The entrepreneur carefully shut the door. This time she bolted the lock. As she shuffled back to her bed that was covered with Egyptian cotton and English linens, three mighty knocks pounded on the door.
"Yes?"
cried the entrepreneur, now alarmed.
"Yes?"
"We have the morning coffee you ordered, madam," a husky voice replied.
The entrepreneur's face was crowded by crevices again. Her heart began to thump vigorously. She grew deeply distressed, and her stomach filled with knots as humongous as the Alps. "They're bringing me coffee at this nutso hour? Unbelievable." She returned to the front of the guest house, undid the lock and opened the front door, haltingly. A stocky man with a disagreeable bald head and one eye that seemed out of joint stood there, smirking. He wore a red windbreaker and denim shorts that dropped just below his knees. Around his neck was a thin piece of blue string. Dangling from it was a plastic laminated photo of a person's face. The entrepreneur squinted to see the face more clearly in the darkness. And as she did, she saw the image of an older man. One she knew very well. One she loved very much. One she missed considerably. The picture in the plastic she was studying was of her dead father.
"Who are you?"
screamed the terrified entrepreneur.
"How did you get this photo?"
"I've been sent by your business partners. We know everything there is to know about you. Everything. We've tracked all your personal data. We've hacked all your files. We've investigated your entire history."
The bald man in the windbreaker reached under the front of his belt and pulled out a knife, bringing it to within a few inches of the entrepreneur's thin and particularly veiny throat.
"No one can protect you now. We have an entire team focused on you. I'm not going to hurt you, yet. This time's just about me making a point, giving you an in-person message. Leave your company, give up your equity, and say bye-bye. Or you get this blade in your neck. When you